Radio.
Hello and welcome to CryptoCurrent, the only podcast to bring you beginner and advanced knowledge of cryptocurrency and blockchain, analyses of cryptocurrency markets, and discussions on growing a business within the crypto space. Stay tuned and stay CryptoCurrent.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of CryptoCurrent. Your host here, Richard Carthon. And today I have a speaker from the CryptoCurrent conference. Now, he wasn't able to make it, unfortunately. We'll get into the story of what happened. But man, Daryl DiPietro with CoinCierge Club, he's CEO and founder, met him a couple months back for a mutual connection with Wayne Marcel. And man, this guy's awesome. Just a genuinely good person that really believes in the ecosystem of cryptocurrency and blockchain and is absolutely all about paying it forward. Daryl, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really, really appreciate being on the show.
Of course, man. And you know, before we kind of dive into everything, can you just give our listeners a little backstory of like what happened and why you weren't able to like make it to the conference?
Oh, absolutely. So I embarked on a two-week tour. The tour included going to Denver, New Orleans, Atlanta, North Carolina, Philadelphia, and New York. I had three flights scheduled to get me out there. I had plans on being in Denver for just one day. And Denver decided to go from 50 degrees and sunny to what they call a bomb cyclone, which is hurricane-force winds, 10-foot snowdrifts, and a 20% drop in pressure. Well, we were fine. Our planes were good. And all of a sudden, our planes were canceled. And we're like, okay, what do we do? Well, let's rent a car. So me and my CTO, Jacob, we decided to get into a rental car, which we had to dig out of the rental car lot and drive and navigate around roads, most of them which were closed, and going around emergency vehicles. And we found ourselves in the town of Elizabeth, Denver, which is only, or Colorado, which is only about 45 minutes out. It took us 3 hours to get there. And GPS split us. I had a Google phone. He's got an iPhone. GPS told me to go one way, him to go another way. We did that. We didn't like that road, and we decided to do a K-turn. And when my CTO did that K-turn, he overshot it by about 6 inches to a foot. And that was enough to, when he put it into reverse, it pulled the car into a 5-foot snowdrift. So we sat there. He got on his phone. I started hiking. Luckily, I have winter gear. I mean, I go snowboarding and up the ski mountains enough to have a solid set of, you know, jacket, gloves, hoodie, scarf, all that stuff. Because living in the desert, you're not supposed to have all that.
So right.
I go looking for help. And basically what I found out was that nobody was able to help anybody. But he was able to get the fire department out there. And the fire department showed up in this lifted Jeep and wenched us out. So then they're like, well, you know, we've got this, you know, little shelter that we set up for people to hang out till the snow clears if you want to go there. And we're like, yeah, sure, we'll go there. But we didn't. We decided to keep pushing because we knew we had like 8 hours at that point, 10 hours at that point to get there. So we drove and we drove and we drove around a road closed sign and we drove around another road closed sign.
Oh,
and
no.
Then finally DOT turned us around. And basically the guy was like, you don't drive around this truck. You're not allowed to drive around this truck. You turn this car back around. And had we known, we were actually getting followed out by the sheriff. We turned at the shelter. We went to the shelter. No big deal. We spent the night. But it was insane to know that we literally couldn't go anywhere. That not only was the weather that bad, but that the government had those roads so on lockdown that there was no opportunity. And you know, from a crypto guy, to see all this, you know, additional government enforcement, it was like, whoa. Why are they trying to keep us in Denver? So anyway, it was a struggle. And we spent the night at a high school or elementary school. And they tried to make it out and just couldn't. We just could not make the logistics in time to get there in order to speak. And it was unfortunate, but, you know, we had quite an adventure trying to get there.
Absolutely, man. And it just is a testament to y'all's character of doing everything you could to even be there, even, you know, literally putting yourselves in danger. So I'm glad you're safe. I'm glad everything worked out. But I know there's going to be some quality conversations that you are going to bring to the conference. And happy that we can get on this podcast so we can deliver some of that quality content and information to our listeners. So with that being said, can you dive a little bit into a little bit about yourself and some background and how did you get into cryptocurrency in the first place?
Yeah, absolutely. So for about 10 out of the last 11 years, give or take, I worked in Las Vegas nightlife and hospitality. I was actually really, really good at what I did. I ascended from a street promoter to a director. I was working as a director of operations, director of VIP services. I ran teams. I ran the entire floor of a nightclub at one point. And I was really good at what I did. Hakkasan Group came along and lobbied to bring the Nevada Gaming Control Board in and over-regulated nightlife. And so that's when I left nightlife. I got a job at Google. I have an education in web and graphic design. And so I was able to transition into Google fairly easily, ascended the ladder there, and left, you know, very happy at what I was able to do with Google. And I was just, you know, trying to figure out what the next step was. And my friend was like, crypto. And I was like, all right, whatever. You know, I'll throw a little bit of money in. I don't think it's legit. But after his consistency, I decided to load in. And it wasn't a ton, but within 3 days, it was gone. The platform crashed. It was 100% Ponzi scam. And my money was gone. And that did not settle well. I mean, I'm somebody that does not get won over on. I'm somebody that, you know, has always ascended to the top of what I do and has always set my goals to be the best that I possibly can. And that not only hurt me, but it instilled this, like, I don't even know how to say it. It's a feeling of wanting to help other people. It was a feeling of wanting to make sure that that never happened again. Making sure that people that weren't as robust as me or as, you know, had the abilities of me didn't get taken advantage of. That was my main goal. So we hijacked the chat group from that crypto project, and me and a couple people decided to launch a forum and blogs and of Bitcoin Faucet. And we just started giving away free Bitcoin and talking about projects and reviewing wallets and basically doing what a lot of the content creators in the space do right now. They look for products, good or bad, and they review them. Well, about 3 weeks into that, we discovered that there was a law called SB 398 here in Nevada. And that states that any business that or entity that operates on blockchain technology is not subject to outside taxes, licenses, and most importantly, regulations. We created a We create a nightlife coin, and now we can bring back all the hosts that got ran out of town. Now we can bring back the cool guy era of people that actually know how to take care of people and aren't just robots that work for casinos, squeaky clean robots. And that's basically what Hakkasan Group did in the nightlife industry over the 2 years or 1.5 years that I wasn't involved. Well, we built the token, we did our research, and because we had done the research prior to wanting to build the token, we knew that Ethereum was overbogged, we knew that Ethereum was having trouble, we knew that Bitcoin was had just decided to do the segregated witness fork to Bitcoin Cash. And so there was a lot of things that were going on in the space that we decided, hey, let's look at the future. Like, who's out there that maybe the technology in 2 years? And we decided that Waves was the way to go. So the Waves platform was literally unheard of. They had barely launched their Lite DEX. And they had, you know, they needed some help. And we came along and we developed the token on their platform and instantly realized there was nobody building any wallets for it. There was no way to use this token that we had created. So yeah, you got a nightlife token, but if you can't use it, then it doesn't do the purpose of getting around that law.
Right. And that's where a lot of different cryptos that came up early ran into this problem where they had these great things, but there was no use cases.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. So we coded out a wallet. Mobile private key wallet built off the Waves APIs. And at that point, I think we had about 9,000 coins on that platform. And as we started to tour and as we started to scale and develop, other businesses were coming to us and saying, hey, you're not just a nightlife coin. You're a point of sale. You're an ability for businesses to accept crypto. And you're worldwide. You're not just Vegas. And so that was, you know, the growing pains of going to, you know, CES, all green-eyed or whatever they call it, you know, basically like, whoa, we didn't know what we had. And so we built a point of sale, and the point of sale, you know, allows vendors to now accept over 25,000 different cryptocurrencies, including Bitcoin and Ethereum and Dash and Zcash, on top of all the other decentralized assets that are on the Waves platform. And so, yeah, I mean, that's really where we how we got to this point is we just kept pushing, we kept fighting for other people's rights, we kept making sure that we were doing it on the right end of things. We never cut any corners, and we never went for the easy path, if that makes sense.
Right. So just to recap, so you got into cryptocurrency after some of your previous jobs, someone kind of Ponzi'd you, and you're like, I don't want this to happen to anyone else. So that's when you decided, I want to create this platform that can help protect people and educate people on like what's going on. And that's how CoinCierge Club started.
Yep. Well, first, the platform that we built was called Crypto Cash Hub. That's actually the business that we incorporated in the state of Nevada is Crypto Cash Hub Incorporated. The brand that we developed is CoinCierge Club.
Gotcha. Can you speak a little bit more to that brand and what's been going on with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's really what's caught the industry by storm. That's what's getting us all the attention. It's this, you know, hospitality token that no one ever thought of building, that, that people are so focused on fintech right now and so focused on what's the obvious applications for crypto, but no one thought about entertainment. And I don't know why, because one of the biggest credit card providers out there actually offers this service through their credit card called the Amex Centurion card, Amex Black Card. And it basically gives celebrities amenities. And so we said, well, why do you have to be a celebrity? Why do you have to have $1 million credit limit? We're already doing this in Vegas for people for very little money. Why don't we open up the token and say, hey, if you hold one of our tokens, which is a penny and a half right now, you get discounts on hotels, you get logistics and nightlife and entertainment, you get hotel, you get nightclub entry, you get bottle service, you get all the things that you would want in a vacation or you know, hospitality amenities, what we like to call it, without having to have that big bankroll.
Which is nice. I mean, just like you said, people want to have that luxury. Just because you're not a celebrity doesn't mean that people aren't willing to go spend the money and want to have those kind of experiences. And so what you are providing is a platform that allows for such and for the everyday person that wants to go and have this, you know, lavish experience to be able to go and have that.
Absolutely. And it's kind of like similar to how credit works in general. You know, if you've got money, you've got credit, you pay lower interest rates. If you don't have money and you don't have credit, you pay more for your money. And it's not fair that people that, you know, maybe want to go to Vegas and only spend $1,000 don't get the same amenities as someone that wants to go spend $100,000. And so that was one of the reasons why I was successful in the nightlife industry, was because I was able to provide these services for people on budgets. I was always the host. I wasn't the guy that was doing $20,000 tables. I was doing $20,000 tables. And so people respected me because I was able to hustle just the same for this and give you the same amenities, the same level of service as you would if you were coming in and dropping some big money. And that's important, you know, to people that right now our economy is good, but what happens when our economy goes bad, or what happens when our economy was bad 10 years ago? People still spend money on entertainment. Why do they need to get ripped off? Why do the big companies get to rip them off on stuff like that? So more, it's just kind of like helping out people. That's really the goal of what we're trying to do.
Well, good, man. And again, going back to, I know I've already talked to this, everyone's listening, the character of Daryl, really great, like, person, really is like for the people and like wants good to happen to everyone and make sure everyone's protected. But just like you said, when you had that eye-opening moment and you're like, wow, this is just bigger than Vegas, this could go so far. Tell me about some of the different community building tactics that you've been doing to get Concierge Club in front of more people.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. So within doing our first conference ever out of town, we were within a month at CES with a booth. At CES with a booth, we were face-to-face with the Trade Commissioner of Mexico. He approached us to try to bring tech companies down to Mexicali and just develop a digital asset for the Mexican peso. That is a project that is now 17 months in the working. Due diligence and legal and an entire regime change. As you know, they got a new president and a lot of different hoops. But that's one of the main communities that we're trying to build. On top of that, I've been able to integrate myself into New York City very well, you know, being from the East Coast originally, my personality seems to fit a little bit. But we're able to partner up with this company called Goldfinger, which is a venture firm, like deal club, basically, where entrepreneurs go in and pitch, and there's a room full of venture capitalists. And we've partnered with them. It's not like we're just part of their team, or I mean, not part of their like club, but the owner of them, the company, is actually a shareholder of our business. And so that's allowed us to get, you know, into the New York financial world, where now we're entertaining, you know, potential offices and other incubator capacities out there, lines of funding from different people from that club. So, you know, that's just another example of how we've tried to, you know, build the community. Out here in Vegas, we've got three separate teams, if you will, of people that are building communities that we're very heavily involved in. We just did an event last week at Goat Sports Bar where you can pay for crypto for goods and services via our application.
Okay.
We're also going to be doing another one this Saturday at Goat as well. And what's really cool about that is these guys can come in and buy beers with crypto, and the bar doesn't get fiat. The bar never touches fiat currency. It's a 100% crypto transaction.
100% digital. Wow. I mean, first of all, like, are you putting out press about that? That sounds awesome. Like, I haven't heard about that anywhere.
We're trying to. I mean, it's a budget limited kind of effort, but at the same time, the market's heating up. And like I had said to you prior to this conversation, you know, we're entertaining some funding, so we feel like it's about to be go time. We feel like it's about to be the rockets are lit. I mean, as the market turns, FOMO starts happening, and investors that we might have been talking to for 6 months, 8 months, 10 months, they're like, oh man, I gotta get involved in this crypto project, or oh, I've been watching you guys develop in a down market, now I want to load in as the thing heats up. And so that's really where we're at, heading back to the East Coast again, gonna be speaking in Austin and then heading back to Philly, New York, doing an event with Tone Vase and Ken Bozak and Nathan Hawk, and some really solid names in the space that people should pay attention to.
No doubt. And just so you can touch on that a little bit more, you know, people have a challenge of like getting their product out to the market and networking and meeting these new people. What is some of the most success that you found with trying to expand your network and talking and networking with some of these different entities?
I think one of the coolest things, or one of the more unique things, is randomly going out of town and then finding meetups in that town. So for example, I had to be in New York at the beginning of, or the middle of January, and I had to be in DC to speak at this event at the beginning of February. And I had about a 2-week hiatus. Well, my aunt lives in New Haven. So I called her up and said, hey, can I spend a couple of days at your house? And she's like, yeah. So I go out there, and then I instantly hit New Haven Bitcoin meetups, Yale Bitcoin meetups. And I started to find different events that were around there, and I go to them, and people are like, oh, where are you from? And I'm like, oh, Vegas. And they're like, really? And I always throw out that joke, like, yeah, I came here all the way from Vegas for this. And they're like, but you know, it's that icebreaker that gets people to realize, hey, this guy's at least got something. At least he's got like some sort of funding or someone backing him or enough, you know, enthusiasm about his own product to be able to go out of town and live out of a suitcase for 2 weeks. And you know, just so you know, I did that in January. Then I did the 2-week trip that we're supposed to be in New Orleans for. And now I'm heading back out. I don't even know. I haven't bought my tickets yet, but it's sometime next week for another 2 weeks. And it's that sort of stuff that, you know, really gets people's attention. I did it again in New York. I was in New York 11 days because of the trip being kind of messed up. I felt a little, you know, guilt about not getting out there. And I started looking, and I found Crypto Mondays, and I found all these other crypto events in Manhattan, and I crashed them. And I went into them. They didn't expect the guy from Vegas with a working product to be there. And it was good. It really you know, shows that you're involved in the space. You know, there's guys in the space like Nathan Hawk, who I've mentioned before, who drove me around for 5 days to make that work. Put me up in Baltimore to make that work. And that's really
where a good person.
No, it really is. And it's not, it's because he's for mass adoption and because he believes in the product and he believes in what we have built and what we believe is the future.
Right. Well, that's great, man. And kind of like shifting from there, but appreciate you like dropping that knowledge and just like why it's important for people to genuinely care about like other people that are trying to like spread the word of crypto and blockchain and are making moves to make it a reality instead of just, you know, talking about it. But as you are starting to go to a lot of these different conversations and have different conversations with different people and learn about different projects, what is a project that you've learned about that you're like, wow, people should be like paying attention to this? Of course, besides your own, but
yeah, I mean, I would say Waves. I would say, how is Waves not in the top 10 cryptocurrencies right now? I mean, they've got $9 million in daily trading on their DEX, 25,000 different digital assets. Let's just say if each one of those assets was every 4 assets was 1 development company, you're still looking at 6,000 development teams on the Waves platform right now. They have easy to use DEX. They have very, very, very good API documentation. Aside from a couple updates that they might not have given us enough head time on, which is whatever, we fixed it. There has been no hiccups whatsoever. We're currently running a forked mainnet of their platform here in Nevada. I can't see another reason why that platform isn't above some platforms that really don't do anything, like Doge and OMG and IOTA and all these coins that are just, I think it's mainly because people invested in them that they're not willing to let that investment kind of go, or not willing to realize, okay, maybe IOTA wasn't the best move.
Gotcha.
Waves just continues to be there. I mean, at one point they were number 20 on CMC. I think they've dropped down to number 27, but it's not because of their own personal cap. Their cap has stayed around the same. The coin has been right around 270 a coin. It's because other coins are getting funded, and I don't understand why. I really don't. And we've always been a big fan of their platform, and we're just trying to figure out why. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, so definitely we'll keep that on my radar and keep looking at you dropped some knowledge on me I had no idea about, so I'm definitely going to do a little bit more research into that. So
yeah, I mean, just from a development standpoint, it's exceptionally easy to work on. Their team is easy to get a hold of. They've got, you know, the Slack channels, they've got Telegram channels, they've got direct email. They're also working with a company called Better Tokens through verification process, which is doing exceptional due diligence. We received our first letter that we didn't have enough information, which is actually a good thing, because we had it, just wasn't in our white paper. And so it's stuff like that where they're just not they're not cutting corners and they're not scaling on hype like some of the other bigger platforms. And you know exactly the ones that I'm talking about. Yeah. They're not doing that. They're just building. And when they build, they release. And when they release, the coin goes up. And that's kind of how we've been. You know, we've never had a huge marketing budget. We've done it all through word of mouth, going around talking to people and meeting up with people. And, you know, that's why we're still here when a lot of companies that raised all that money in 2017 spent it all on marketing and Lambos and parties and events. And I think Dash had a strip club rented out in Miami for one of the events and stuff. Wow. Like that. It's, you know, if you see us in a club, it's because I got it for free. If you see, you know, marketing at some event, it's because my friend owns the business and we were able to do some sort of negotiation. And it's stuff like that, the bartering, that really shows how you scale this stuff in this industry.
Good point, especially on the barter side. Like, there's just so many ways that people can collaborate to get things done. It's not so much you have to go and blow all your money on, like you said, marketing for what? Like, what is your end result? What are you trying to get out of it? So I think you've been very clever and strategic about how you've been doing that. But also, I know you talked about ways, but there's a lot that's happened in the last 3 years in the crypto space. Mm-hmm. What is something that is in the horizon, whether it's this year or in the next couple of years, what is something that you think people should be paying attention to?
I think that we need to really, really, really examine the security aspect of blockchain. I understand that transactions are encrypted, but when people say encryption, they don't quite understand what that means. Spend 10 hours in a car with a guy who's a white hat hacker and he'll change your opinion on private keys and security. No, I'm serious. I mean, this gentleman, third time I mentioned his name, Nathan Hawk, does the integrity show. We were out in San Diego. He brought in a former black hat turned white hat named Manford, who exposed 800 different private keys in the Ethereum network. He's not going to steal the money because he's a white hat now, but he showed you how the Ethereum network has vulnerabilities, and yet people still put money into these networks. When quantum computing comes to, you know, public, when quantum computing becomes available to normal people, we're going to have a problem with SHA-256 encryption. And so companies that aren't looking at things like SHA-5 or SHA-3 really need to start paying attention. And then on top of that, even if you're using SHA-256 encryption, you might not be using it to encrypt the actual data being sent between mobile devices. And that's one thing that we've stressed on security. Our developer is a subcontractor for the US DOD. He's the white hat that does the Air Force hackathons. So encryption, security, those are things that we really need to be careful of, because we're talking about money. And what we're talking about right now is we're talking about taking the safety net and blanket that society has away from money. We're talking about removing banks. Now, banks are horrible, but they do one good thing. They protect up to $250,000 of yours per account on an insurance policy. And you can believe if that money is real or not, but that's why society likes banks. And if we can't prove that these private keys are secure, we're going to have a problem with mass adoption. And I mean, that's coming from somebody that's done 46 conferences in 2018. That's coming from someone that's pushing mass adoption of an actual product in the space. We have a hurdle to get over, and it's, you know, it's security, it's web security. And it might not even be web-based. It might be node-based. It might be a different type of network that isn't the internet, that isn't a world wide web. But We've got a hurdle to go through, and that's definitely something that people need to keep an eye on. And most people just cut corners. They think, oh, I'll download this wallet. It's a private key wallet. Oh, I hold my private keys. That means I'm safe. Well, the information they're sending back and forth between your mobile device and the node or the, you know, central location that's holding that information isn't encrypted the same way the transaction is.
Right. No, very valid point. And you posed something that someone said the other day that I was speaking with about just that, the security side of it. Yes, everyone's saying like, yes, is blockchain more secure and XYZ? Yes, the transaction side of it. But kind of like what you're alluding to with holding your wallets and making sure that you're secure and for mass adoption to happen, these people, whenever they buy something, are just going to trust like, oh, this is safe. Oh, this, whatever it is. And then just like, you know, not trying to get run over by anybody or having some of these hackers come in and expose, like you said, what a bunch of people that could have just gotten their money taken from them.
Vulnerabilities.
You got to mitigate the risk. And, you know, we are still at the beginning of cryptocurrency and blockchain, and it's still in its infancy, and it will grow and it will get better. But it just shows that that's just another element as people are building these things to ensure the security of that. So I do appreciate you bringing that to the attention of the listeners today, and make sure that people are more cognizant in that kind of conversation when they listen out for people building XYZ, that they are pushing for that as well, because they need to be aware.
I mean, anybody can skin my Ether wallet into an Ethereum wallet, but when you start sending it back and forth between mobile devices, how do you make sure that that's encrypted? I was talking to my CTO, and we got into a little bit of a discussion over web versus mobile-based, and you know, web view logins versus mobile-based logins, and why there's a difference. And I said, listen, if you're building an application for Google and you submit it to the Google Play Store and it's a Google application, then you don't have to worry about a third-party vulnerability when you're accessing the information. But if you make it as accessible to a web prompt or a web, you know, link, then you're using a third-party web browser, and then you're using, even if it's a Google Chrome, Google Chrome is still third-party to Google Play. And I only know that because I work for Google, and I know right. how segregated those systems truly are. And so that's stuff that, that most people don't think about. They just think, oh, if it's got a SSL certificate, it's secure. That's another third party verifying your stuff. So, I mean, it's interesting where we're at. It is in the infancy. I think that the technical nerds are really starting to drive the point across to people. And I think that as we push education first, we'll be able to develop a society that understands the risks of holding your own private keys.
Absolutely. And I think that would actually be a really good segment for you to be pushing and driving home too, because a lot of people aren't talking about that. Like, this isn't a conversation that when I speak to other people about this, we're not talking about this. So I really
appreciate it. We're having a conversation for a year or two or three forward, but that's why we've been able to scale the way we have, because 2 years ago we were talking about waves, and a year ago we were talking about, you know, 25,000 decentralized assets and decentralized node servers and forking mainnets. And most people were like, oh, I've got an Ethereum wallet. Let's build an Ethereum coin and do an ICO.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, those are the guys that aren't in the space anymore.
Be forward thinking. Yeah. Very, very solid point. So there are a lot of like great value dropped into this conversation. It's been sensational. What is a final thought that you want to leave with all of our listeners today?
Yeah. So crypto is the future, but not all crypto is the future. You have to stop and think, what is the use case of this cryptocurrency and how can I get value out of it? I think the value proposition of most of the coins out there lacks why people would want to use it. And that's why they haven't started to adapt. I know that, you know, just because a coin has value or doesn't have value does not equate to the value of the project itself. For example, we raised our money in private equity. We raised our money in a PPM and a convertible note. When we incorporated, we started, you know, selling shares on private rounds. And you don't see that money reflected in our coin value. But you do in the development of the application and the fact that we can run payroll and attend different conferences and be able to afford stuff. The other thing is, be very, very weary of people that are for profit in the space. And I'll call you out as a great example of running a conference and not being for profit. Running a conference and wanting that conference to do well and not just trying to get a quick buck out of people. Yeah. And I've dealt with, you know, doing almost 50 conferences in a year, I probably dealt with three times that many directors of them or founders of them that were like, no, we need fiat currency, or no, we have to accept Bitcoin only, or no, we need to do this. And those are the guys that you kind of sit around and laugh about when you're hanging out with, you know, the real people like Bozak. You're like, yeah, man, this guy, they wanted $1,000 for a ticket, or they wanted $10,000 for a booth. And so it's stuff like that. Just watch out for the snakes in the grass. Understand that not everybody is as genuine as they may appear. But you do your due diligence. You look at the products. You look who's been consistent. You look who hasn't pivoted or been fly by night. And, you know, be cautious and invest wisely. But don't always look at the coin value. Coin value is not what we're here for. Mass adoption of cryptocurrency is what we're here for. The technologies behind it is what we're here for. The decentralization of assets is what we're here for. For example, we filed a U.S. patent to tokenize electricity collected from solar, which we can then pass that asset through our point of sale and create a liquid energy grid for third world and emerging economies.
Wow.
Yeah, that's bigger than just Bitcoin. A lot of people can't see past Bitcoin. Oh, Bitcoin price is down, or oh, you lost all that money. Nah, I'm not invested in Bitcoin. I don't really own any Bitcoin. I'm not interested in, you know, that dinosaur technology. What I'm interested in is the future of cryptocurrencies, mass adoption, and blockchain.
Y'all, mic drop on that one. Just y'all heard it here first, man. Just be forward thinking. This guy's obviously living in the next 5 years, and we're just trying to catch up. But pay attention. Hey, so if people want to connect with you, find out some more information about, you know, Coinsierge Club and everything that you have going on, what are some different ways they can connect with you?
Yeah, I mean, you can go to our website. It's coinsierge.club. That's coinsierge.club. You can also send me an email directly at darryll@coinsierge.club. We have all major social channels, so Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We have a WhatsApp group. We've got a Telegram chat. We've got a Slack channel, although we're not too heavy in the Slack channel. But, you know, you can get a hold of us, and we're always there to answer. We're not the kind of people that ghosts or, you know, have a team running our Telegram. If you add yourself to our Telegram, 99% of the time, I'm welcoming you personally from my account. And that's the type of hands-on support that we give people, and that's the concierge level that we bring to crypto. White glove service, you know, 5-star, 5-diamond Forbes service.
Perfect. Well, awesome. Again, really appreciate this conversation we got to hear, and I'll make sure I drop all of that in the show notes as well. But Daryl, thank you so much for joining us today and for dropping all this knowledge on us, man. It has been great.
Oh, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, man. You take it easy, and everyone, stay cryptocurrent.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening to another episode of Cryptocurrent. For more information on this episode and all of our episodes, please visit us at www.crypto-current.co. Stay up to date with the latest news in cryptocurrency by signing up for our newsletter. You will receive a daily email Monday through Sunday that is personalized and curated content specific to you and your interest, powered by artificial intelligence.
This has been another episode of Cryptocurrent, bringing you one step closer to becoming a crypto and blockchain aficionado. We look forward to giving you the latest in crypto news and analyses next week. Stay cryptocurrent.
Please use available exits now.